How you doing with your electric bill? Pura approved another rate increase yesterday, and people seem outraged by it. On the show now is Eversource spokesperson Jamie Ratcliffe, who we don't blame you.
No.
You're a spokesperson.
You got to do what you got to do.
What would you like to say to customers right now?
Well, so first, Chaz and AJ, thank you both for having me on this this morning for an opportunity to speak with your listeners. You know, we certainly understand the frustration that customers are experiencing and seeing. We share that frustration because the increase that customers saw starting July 1 was an avoidable increase, one that we had warned about more than a year ago. So we certainly understand the frustration. You know, we are here to help customers who are struggling with their bill. We ask that they reach out to us. We have assistance programs. We have payment plans. You know, additionally, take a look at what the supply rate is that you're currently paying if you're not on standard service. Make sure that your rate is as low as the supply rate of standard service of 8.99 cents per kilowatt hour. And we are focused on solutions that we believe will help create that bill stability and predictability that customers want to prevent this kind of rate shock from happening again. Because we understand having this kind of rate shock, especially during the summer months when you are having a lot more usage because it's been so hot and humid, it takes a toll on customers. We understand that.
So you said a few seconds ago this was avoidable. How?
Yes. More than a year ago, we had shared our concern with regulators over and over again that the rates that they had set for these state-mandated programs, which is the public benefits portion of the bill that increased starting July 1, more than a year ago, we had warned regulators that, look, the rates they had set did not reflect the actual costs of these programs, and they were pushing these costs forward to see now what we're seeing, a large wall of costs that customers are paying for. They're paying for these programs not just from this year, they're paying for costs from last year as well. You think of it in very simple terms, like a credit card. So if you put down, say you charge $1,000 on your credit card every single month, and you pay that off in a timely manner every single month as you're charging it, at the end of 12 months, you're in a good spot. But instead, if you're charging that $1,000 every month and you're only paying the minimum payment, or you're not paying anything at all, then at the end of 12 months, you're going to have an issue. And that's what we're seeing right now.
All right, let's do it this way. Connecticut is a top five state in terms of electricity costs.
Right.
Depending on what you look at, we could be number two or we could be number five, depending on who you believe. Why are we paying the most for electric in the United States?
So there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot there, right? So first, let's talk about the public benefits, because I know what's on everyone's mind right now.
Yeah, no, but let me ask you something. If you had to boil it down to a couple of sentences, would it be who do we direct our anger at?
Yeah, start with that.
Here to point fingers. I just don't think that that's an effective way of trying to find solutions for customers. If you want to talk about why costs are high,
but we are
at the end of the natural gas pipeline. Natural gas makes up about 50% of the electric that is generated through this region, and we have constrained pipelines, and natural gas is heavily reliant and vulnerable to market forces. So we are unique in the region in that sense. Specifically talking about public benefits, July 1, largest increase ever within the public benefits portion of that bill that both regulated electric utilities in this state saw, that no other state in the region saw.
Okay. So, the Millstone deal, bad deal, correct?
This isn't an issue specifically about any of these programs that were within public benefits. To make it clear, we do not profit from and we do not control the programs within public benefits, but we support a lot of these programs. We think that they are beneficial for customers. They provide critical value for customers, specifically talking about the power purchase agreement. Over the course of the contract so far, it's been relatively neutral for customers. Some years, it's been a credit for customers. Some years, it's been a cost. The issue here, while public benefits increased in July 1, certainly the largest portion of that was the power purchase agreement, which includes the Millstone deal. The issue for why we saw the largest increase ever within public benefits was regulatory decisions last year to keep that rate at zero.
Okay, so if we listen to what you just said, we blame PURA.
Again, I am not here to point fingers, but look, you have to find out what is the issue that's happening. If you've got a leaky sink, you can't go looking at your fridge to try and fix the problem. I'm going to focus on what are the issues.
This is beyond the leaky fridge.
In order to focus on the issues, you can then work on solutions.
Now, you know what? Part of the, I think a lot of frustration, one, we can't pay these bills.
Yeah.
And two, everyone passes it on to somebody else. Legislators say PURA. PURA says talk to every, you know, if I go to the PURA site right now, they're clearly blaming you. They say talk to your utility company.
Yeah. They're pointing fingers.
I'm just telling you facts. I'm telling you exactly what caused this large increase starting July 1 and that we're focused on the rate-making solutions that we think will make a difference for customers so they're not seeing this kind of rate shock in the future. Pointing fingers, look, I'll leave that up to other people. Pointing fingers is just frankly unproductive. Pointing fingers does nothing to solve the actual problems that customers are facing right now.
Okay, then what are you going to do to solve the problems that customers are facing right now?
Yeah, so, you know, as of right now, so there are several things. So to start with right now, and I know that some listeners may be rolling their eyes here, but, you know, there are some energy efficiency things that customers can do.
That's, one of those things, you know, yeah, you're right. That is an eye roller. You know,
but look, it makes a difference on your bill. Whether you want to call it an eye roller or not, it makes a difference on your bill. Additionally, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, the supply rate. If you're shopping for a third-party supplier,
you sound mad.
Make sure when
we're the ones who are mad. You sound mad.
I'm trying to get a word in edgewise with you two. You guys won't let me explain exactly what's taking place here.
I'm just asking questions. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are listening to you right now who are very upset, and they're asking themselves, how am I going to pay this bill?
Yeah.
And nobody, the legislators, PURA, you, it's nobody's fault. Or look at that one, point over here. It's hard when we see what Eversource makes in terms of dollars and cents and what the people, the executives make and bonuses to say this has to, you have to charge this amount of money.
Yeah.
You're making a lot of profit off of Connecticut residents.
Look, let's talk about executive compensation because it does come up, all right? If you want to talk about our CEO's compensation, it is benchmarked to multiple peers in the utility industry. The vast majority of his compensation isn't even embedded into rates. It's shareholders who pay that. Now, this increase that customers are experiencing, again, has nothing to do with executive salary. You could take all executive salary, so not just the CEO, all executive salary, zero it out, put it onto Connecticut Electric bills, it would not make a dent in this more than $800 million bill for these state-mandated programs.
Jamie, you sound really mad.
We're talking about $800 million worth of programs here that customers are paying for.
Okay. And I know you say, well, let's not point fingers, but who enacted these programs?
Lawmakers and regulators.
Right. Okay. All right. That's why I started this with, I don't blame you.
No.
And I don't blame Eversource. You know, but people need to come clean on what's happening here. So this, let me ask you about the COVID moratorium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is part of the public benefits increase in our bill now, right? And PURA decided mm-hmm. to get this money in 10 months instead of 2 years, which would have been a softer pad for us. These people who were not paying their bills during COVID, do they still owe you money or do you zero them out?
It's a total of the $800 million. And I think this is important to point out here. Of that $800 million increase to the public benefits portion of the bill that started July 1, unpaid bills make up about $140 million of that. Look, the moratorium that lasted more than 4 years certainly exacerbated that total, but it's $140 million. But the largest portion of that $800 million is those power purchase agreements.
And that includes Millstone, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And why would we want to keep Millstone open?
That's a conversation for lawmakers.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay. That's an indirect finger pointing, but I like to, like, at least it's like.
No, I'm not finger pointing. I'm saying it is a conversation. Look, lawmakers put that contract into effect because they felt like it was the right thing for Connecticut, having a reliable source of energy within Connecticut.
Right. So, but I'm wondering, let's say I didn't pay my bill during that moratorium, which was the longest moratorium in the United States, by the way. And let's just say I didn't pay my bill through that whole stretch, didn't get turned off. We get out of the moratorium. Did I get turned off?
If you had outstanding balances and didn't engage with us in any sort of payment programs or assistance programs, if you were eligible for them, then yes, you would have gotten shut off notifications. But look, regarding the moratorium, you know, we never want to shut off anyone's power. That's not the goal here. But what being able to have notifications to customers that aren't paying their bills allows us to do is it allows us to engage with customers. And more than 90% of customers who receive a shut off notification take action of some kind. Right. Whether that is, you know, calling us to get on a payment plan or an assistance program.
So you have $140 million of electric rates or bills that weren't paid during that moratorium. Do those people, are they now zeroed out? In other words, I didn't pay during COVID. I get to the end of the moratorium. I owe you a ton of money. The government is now going to pay, you know, us. We, the ratepayers, are going to pay that $140 million now. Am I zeroed out, or do I still owe you money?
You would still owe money.
Okay.
Okay.
Then why would I be paying the $140 million? Why are all the ratepayers paying $140 million if I would still owe you money?
Service, and just as a hypothetical, someone has service, they haven't paid throughout the moratorium. At the end of the moratorium, they get a shut off notification, then they can't pay or won't pay, whatever the case may be, then their power would get shut off, but their balance would still be due.
Okay.
Gotcha.
But then what happens? How does it get into this $140 million total that we're going to pay for? And then once that is paid for, does this person... I'm trying to figure out. At some point, you submit a bill for $140 million in unpaid electric rates. Bills.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, all the ratepayers pay it. But now, if I was shut off during that period, I come to you and I say, I moved to a new place. I want the electric on. And you say, no, you owe us money.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. How do I owe you money if the ratepayers paid my bill for me?
Because you still owe that money. And if we actually, look, the rates are adjusted on it. You can have an under and over recovery. So if, like, say, like, all that $140 million was all paid by customers in this coming year through April 30th, which is how long the public benefits increase is going for, then, you know, depending on if there were any other outstanding balances, you know, there could be a credit that goes back to customers on that rate, on that specific rate.
All right, so you're adjusting as you go along.
Yes.
Gotcha. So if that $140 million that we're going to pay back in public benefits over the next 10 months, let's say $40 million of it gets paid back from people who want to turn on the Eversource, we're going to see that in our bill. You're going to give that back to us.
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding of it. But, I mean, that's assuming that you're living in a vacuum and that there's not a continuation of people not paying their bills.
Oh, so I see. So if this isn't just COVID, this is if people don't pay their bills and they get shut off, we have to pay their bill.
Yes, all customers pay bills for when customers don't pay bills. Yes.
Really? That's interesting to me.
Wow.
And the 140, it's usually nowhere near the $140 million. And again, that $140 million was exacerbated by the moratorium that was in effect for more than 4 years.
Did Eversource...
Longer than any other state in the country.
You know, the federal government doled out a lot of money to keep businesses in business during COVID.
Yeah.
Did Eversource take any of that COVID money?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And Pura, it seems like they pretty much agree to any rate increase you guys ask for. Like, I don't understand what is their purpose.
They are regulators, and no, they certainly don't approve every single rate adjustment that takes place. Look, but these are rate adjustments. This is money owed for.
You call it an adjustment, but it never gets adjusted down.
Right? It's always adjusted up.
It's a nice word for increase.
I'm going to call you out on that. The supply rate did get adjusted down quite significantly for customers using 700 kilowatt hours per month. It was a $40 decrease on customers' bill for the supply rate. It did go down starting July 1. So that, I'm going to call you out on that. That's not true.
Okay. All right. This is just,
Look, I understand. It is frustrating. And nothing I say is going to,
you don't sound sympathetic for what's happening in the state. You sound really mad,
us. I'm not that. I'm sorry if I'm coming across like that, but that's not it at all. No, I it is frustrating. I understand that. I pay an Eversource bill as well. Many of us pay Eversource bills. It is frustrating to see this type of increase happening that was avoidable. You know, we don't want to see these kind. When you have a household. You budget, right? So you want to have an idea of what your monthly budget is. But when you have this large rate shock for customers, it's hard to budget for this kind of thing. But I do also want to point out here that, that the increase that customers are seeing, the majority of that is caused by usage. Customers use about 35% more electricity during the summer months, but we have seen several heat waves. And starting, last month, July, hottest July on record for the Central Connecticut region. So usage has increased incredibly. And I encourage your listeners to take a look at your electric bill. See exactly, they have that really convenient bar chart that shows usage. And you can compare what was your July usage compared to your May and June. How did it stack up to last July?
Okay. So you're saying the legislators decided that this increase would happen now in the middle of summer, right?
So this is a standard rate adjustment that happens every single year. So we had proposed what we call a phase-in approach. So typically this gets adjusted May 1 of every single year. So we had suggested a smaller increase May 1 with the larger increase taking place July 1 because we knew supply rate was going to drop. So as supply rate drops and public benefits increase, it would completely offset one another. Regulators voted to have that total amount begin July 1. And, for a typical customer using, 700 kilowatt hours is what we say is like a typical residential customer. So it was, if you look at the drop in supply price, which is about a $40 bill impact, and then you look at the adjustment to public benefits, which was about a $48 increase to public benefits, the net total all was about $8 increase. But again, it's based on your usage. So if you're using more than 700 kilowatt hours, public benefits is also based on usage.
Yeah. All right. It doesn't sound like anyone takes any responsibility for any of this.
No.
And we just keep getting the fingers pointed in different directions.
Big circle.
No, look.
And look, this all these green initiatives, these EV things, there's less than 1% electric vehicles on Connecticut roads. And I heard that Eversource, in your statement, that Eversource supports all these initiatives.
Yeah.
Of course you do. Why wouldn't you want cars plugged in at night?
Yeah.
Look, increased electrification is going to be critical as the state moves towards its decarbonization goals. So we certainly support the state's decarbonization goals. The increase you're talking about that was finalized yesterday by PURA, that will take effect September 1. This is all part of the same proceeding. So this adjustment, as I mentioned, it typically gets adjusted once a year. It can get adjusted up to two times a year. So this is the second adjustment that's taking place for September 1. So, and it has to do specifically with the EV charging program that we have been administering for a while now.
Okay. I think I'm more frustrated now than I was before we started talking. It doesn't sound like you're very empathetic to what's happening out in the streets of this state right now, and people can't pay these bills.
See, I don't think that that's true at all, and I feel like that's
what, that people can't pay these bills?
No, that I don't care. I think that's frankly a bit cruel and just like a mischaracterization. Of course I absolutely care. But I'm telling you what the solutions are that we have proposed.
Right. Turn off our lights and turn down our air conditioner.
No, look, like those are just, look, it's based on
that is kind of a dumb thing to do right now. It's like a poke in the eye.
That can certainly help reduce your usage. Look, whether you think it's dumb or not, that has an impact on usage. But look, we have proposed several solutions to the rate making process that we believe will create that rate stability that customers are looking for. If you want to get into the specifics, I'm happy to do that. Look, we want to align the part of the rate that deals with the state mandated power contract, so the millstone, that sort of thing, with when the supply rate is changing, January 1 and July 1, because both of those rely on, they're very vulnerable to market forces, so we feel like they should be changing at the same time. We want to return to using forecasted costs because to set rates for the coming year, because using last year's costs as indicator of current year's expenses. Look, I can get into the details here, right, but you don't seem to be wanting to listen to the actual solutions that we are presenting here.
Well, we pay the most amount of money for electric. We're top five in the United States. So you guys are doing okay. And, you know, if our company wants to do something to get more customers, we have to invest in that infrastructure. Yeah. We pay that. We don't pass that on to our customers. And for us to pay for all these electric stations is stupid. You should be doing that because you know what you're going to do with those electric stations. You're going to plug cars in and you're going to make more money.
Right. Have them pay.
That is, again, that program is within public benefits, which are state mandated and approved programs that we do not control or profit from. Look, if you take a look at your electric bill, there's four components: local delivery, transmission, supply, and public benefits. Local delivery and transmission, those are the components that we're responsible for. So you think of the people, the poles, all the equipment, the training, all of that is within those two components of the bill. They make up about 40% of a customer's bill. The two components, supply and public benefits, which were the ones that changed July 1, are by far the most volatile components of your bill and also the most vulnerable to market forces. Those are what changed, and they make up nearly 60% of a customer's bill.
All right. Well, Jamie, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
Now, when she said anytime, right, she probably meant, like, never calls again.
Exactly right.
I will say in her defense, she was upset, but I do have that effect on people at times.
She gave us the full 20, too. She didn't hang up. Yeah. You know, she didn't, like, I have another call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She hung in there.
She did. Mm. Went the full rounds.
Yeah. Let's talk to Vincent Candelora, Minority Leader of the House. I hate that Republicans are the only ones that are coming out saying this is an outrage. I hate that because I want us all to be together on this. Republicans,
unified.
Democrats.
Yeah, unified.
But here's the reality is we raised this issue back in February. It was a perfect storm that we kind of saw coming. And for whatever reason, the Democrats like what Pura is doing and think they're doing a good job. So we don't agree on the whole regulatory.
I have to disagree with you a little bit there because the two Democratic leaders of the Senate, Looney and what's his face? The other guy.
Starts
with a D.
But you that letter they submitted? They submitted that letter during the hearing after it was all cooked.
Oh.
So that was purely a political letter to cover their asses.
Oh.
When in reality, this process has been going on for 6 months. We knew this was happening. And I think they felt like, oh, it's getting too hot. Let's pretend that we object to this. When in reality, the only way we could stop this is going into special session. We should move that $80 million off of everyone's electric bill and put it in the general fund. If we want these kind of policies, we should not be paying for them as ratepayers. Government should be paying for them. But they nickel and dime you to death. And it's a great gimmick because you get to spend more money you know, you put passport to parks in your registration fees. You put electric charging stations on your electric bill, and you get to hide all these taxes. And what's happened now is it's all coming back to haunt us because it was a perfect storm that all these charges hit all at once.
Plus, during not a great time for inflation, groceries, you know, I can't believe what three bags of groceries cost now.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough, and it's all hitting all at once. And it feels like, I think a lot of us feel like the walls are coming in.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And we have a $329 million surplus right now that was left over from last year. We could use that money to offset these rate increases. You know, we shouldn't be paying for that moratorium. And granted, it's only, it's roughly between the two companies, $200 million out of a billion-dollar bill. But that's still $200 million. And then you add on the $80 million for the charging stations, there's some relief that government could provide. And that's why we really should go in and pay these debts off, because it has very little to do about electric rates and has everything to do about social programs.
What do you think about PURA? What's the deal with that?
I don't like PURA. I've been very critical of them for 2 years. What happened is 10 years ago, Malloy separated PURA out, or I'm sorry, they brought PURA into the Department of Environmental Protection. PURA used to be an independent, autonomous body. And what's happened over time is it's now become a political body. So what Eversource didn't really say directly is they've had this accumulation of debt over 2 years, these charges they had to recover. And PURA just arbitrarily kept saying no, 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 and ramped up all this debt and then said, okay, we'll let you recover. Now, Eversource knew they were going to get killed by customers. So they said, well, let us start phasing it in on May 1st so the increases aren't as dramatic. PURA said no, and then they ended up having to go in and do this recovery, and now it's done all at once in a 10-month period, and it's the worst scenario possible. And I blame PURA for that. So the programs
But let me ask you this. Do they make decisions based, like, do they have a direct line to the governor? Are they basing?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's the thing. They're supposed to have four-year terms. The governor hasn't renewed any of their terms, so they serve at the whim of the governor. He could fire them tomorrow if he wanted to.
Okay.
So what does that do? That removes the autonomy. So now they're in his office, and they've got to listen to the governor's office on what decisions they're going to make. I've been saying for months, they need to renew those appointments or fire them. They need to get out from under the governor's office.
Okay. So Eversource was saying, phase this in, and the governor says no to PURA, and PURA says no to Eversource, hit them all at once.
Right.
Why would they do that? That doesn't seem like a smart thing to do.
I think they were hedging their bets. Like for the Millstone contract, as Eversource pointed out, we've had years where we've made money off of that contract. So last year we lost money. So I'm only guessing, but I think PURA thought, let's not let them recover, and let's maybe they'll make money next year and we could offset it. And unfortunately, it was 2 years of losses in a row. So rather than letting them recover at the time they could recover, they hedged their bets and they bet wrong, and we're all suffering. And on top of it all, by delaying those cost recoveries by almost 2 years, Eversource now has to charge interest on that money.
So it's amazing.
You know, PURA made a bad situation a hell of a lot worse. And, you know, you're not going to hear from any of them. You'll never get them on a radio station. They won't even answer FOI requests.
No, I see that. And we've reached out to them, and they send a standard, we're in litigation, so we can't speak to anybody, whatever.
Every utility company in water is suing PURA right now. Wow. It's remarkable.
Do you think that you think this is calculated or miscalculated?
I think it's miscalculated. I think that, you know, obviously there are certain people in the building that want to see everybody driving electric vehicles, so they push their programs. But I think that they just miscalculate on a lot of decisions. And PURA is acting like a classic government agency where you just deny costs, you close your eyes and you pretend, you know, the bill isn't there and you don't have to pay it. And ironically, by not letting the utility companies recover in a timely fashion, everyone's going to be paying a higher bill. And this is the same thing going on with water, too, by the way. I mean, they keep denying cost recoveries. Connecticut Water, just a couple months ago, got denied a ton of their costs. And that just delaying all of that, eventually you have to pay the piper.
Yeah. Okay.
So
you ever open a door and wish you didn't open a door?
Yes.
I know. We've got a
oh my God.
We've got a lot of work ahead of us. I mean short term we've got to pay these bills down. Long term, you know, we've got to start getting serious about nuclear. I mean, right now the Democrats want to ban gas power generation. I mean, that's one of the cheapest forms of electricity we have right now. We just need to get away from this Green New Deal that keeps being pushed at the local level and federal level, and figure out how this country is going to deliver affordable energy.
Yeah.
It's hard to, ironic, like,
we're gonna hold
you know, I, you know, I'm not one of these global warmer deniers. I don't really know
right.
enough about the
either.
Right.
I don't know enough about the subject to speak intelligently on it, but I do know when I was a kid, we used to have brutal winters here.
And you know,
summers that were okay. Now we're having tropical summers and almost no winter. So there might be something to it. Maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit.
No doubt weather is changing. I think climate change, you could clearly say that. And there is some warming that's going on. And how we go about fixing it. I mean, when China's building a coal plant every week and we're shutting them down every week, it's an offset that doesn't make sense. I mean, it's sort of a global issue that has to be dealt with globally. And to think the state of Connecticut is going to impact the atmosphere is absurd.
Seriously.
And that's where, you know, we had the bill this year that was going to ban those gas powered plants. And that would have made all of our electricity rates even higher. We just have to kind of stop the nonsense and apply some common sense and recognize that everything isn't free. And people end up having to pay for it, and people are suffering right now.
Let me ask you something, because I asked Jamie with Eversource. We're in the top five in terms of what we pay for electric bill. I know Hawaii's always going to be number one. Yeah. Where are we really? Two, three, four, five?
I don't know exactly. We're in the top five. I think we've been two or three. In the recent past, I don't know where we are today.
How do we?
But, you know,
how do we get there?
Yeah.
You know, we're
similar to Hawaii. I mean, we are in an electric grid cul-de-sac. If you think about it, we have Long Island Sound to our south. We can't get another pipeline through for more gas. New York won't let us bring a pipeline in to the west of us. So we're dealing with if we could get hydro from the north, or we have to build nuclear. So we don't have a lot of options, and we haven't had a nuclear plant commissioned in 50 years. That's why Millstone can't close. That's 40% of our power.
Right.
So while people could criticize that deal, we couldn't run the risk of letting them close. Otherwise, we'd have rolling brownouts. So Connecticut, the long-term approach is we've got to start looking at gas. We've got to start looking at nuclear. People are going to freak out when that wind deal off of New London comes in. Those bids are coming in at 15 cents a kilowatt hour. That's three times the amount that we're paying for Millstone.
Wow.
So
I can't take any more bad news. I got to go.
My tummy hurts.
My brain can only take so much in one day. I'm past my quota.
I live with this every day.
Oh, man.
I don't know how you do it.
Seriously, bourbon?
All right. And just for the record, we're asking all these Democrats to come on. I don't want it to be an R or a D.
Yeah.
You know, I just want it to be, we're in Connecticut. We're all in this together. How can we fix this together?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, all right.
I have a bipartisan record. I'm not always bashing them, but this one just blows my mind that this is allowed to go on this long.
All right.
Yep.
Vincent Candelora, Minority Leader of the House. Thank you.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.